This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm your sometimes host, Matt Scalina.
So, Matt, I know you're joining today. We had Melissa last week.
That's right.
I'm guessing just because she was on it, it was probably the highest rated show we had. I think when I saw the numbers, we had 9 listeners.
I'm out of a job.
Yeah, well, you're out of a job. I'm out of a job.
No, and you know what? It's just that Melissa's so busy this week that I have to fill in again, but I think she's going to be back.
She's the busiest one of all of us. That's why me and you are here.
Yeah, exactly. She doesn't have time to be involved in these podcasts. But how's life, Corey? Who's on the show today?
Today we have Chris Van Vliet from our Langley office, because we had a few listeners reach out a while ago, and I'm assuming that they either own a small business or they want to acquire a small business, and under the commercial umbrella, business sales fall under there. Chris is a specialist at buying and selling businesses along with other assets. So we wanted to have him on the show today to talk about how does buying and selling a business differ from maybe an investment property? Because you do get a lot of people out there that start off as a small business owner, and then maybe eventually they kind of graduate their way up to actually buying commercial property, or maybe even buying the property they're in.
Right.
So Chris will talk a little bit more about like what steps go into it, how does it differ, what type of timelines, who do you have to seek approvals from? So it's a completely different monster to unwrap than say if you're just buying a strata lot as an investor.
It sounds like a great episode to me. And before we get to that, Corey, the Christmas party.
This
is how. Yeah. What you and I are concerned about. Melissa's out there doing deals.
Yeah.
William Wright Christmas party. I got another invite. I must have really impressed last year.
Yeah, we've adopted you.
Yeah.
So I can't honestly say if Adam got one, but but yeah, so we've got our William Wright staff Christmas party this year, which
right.
We'll have, hopefully if everyone can show up and make it there, we'll have between 100 and 100 plus people attend from across the province to kind of, show our well wishes, get together, have some good old beverages and some great food.
Yeah.
So you're on the list again this year.
I the commercial real estate world is, I'm not really that much involved, but it's fun to kind of come and watch. It's a different beast than residential, that's for sure. And it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. But you have tremendous impact on that industry through your microphone and headset on this episode.
Oh, hey, stop it.
All 9 listeners of this show, they appreciate every week that you're on.
Right on. Well, maybe we will cut to our talk with Chris. This is good. Learned a lot from this conversation.
Yeah, it's a great conversation, guys. Enjoy. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
This podcast is sponsored by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been nominated for Multifamily Builder of the Year for 10 consecutive years and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with 2 fitness areas, 3 children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
Okay, so we're here with Chris Van Vliet, team leader at William Wright at the Fraser Valley office and commercial broker. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well today. How are you guys doing?
Very well. Very well. We're excited to have you on the show, Chris. Maybe for our listeners, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yes, absolutely. I've been in commercial real estate for over 10 years. And part of that has been working in business sales and acquisitions. So I've sold over 100 small businesses in my career. And that's one of the areas that I wouldn't say I necessarily focus on, but I do have a fair amount of experience in that area.
Chris is our team leader of our Fraser Valley office. He runs the whole show out there, does a phenomenal job with it, specializes not only in business sales, but also major asset sales, does a phenomenal job leasing major shopping centers out there for us. But Chris, we wanted to have you on today because I think, you know, business sales falls under the commercial umbrella. We've had listeners kind of reach out in the past that we're assuming are probably either looking to buy a business or maybe potentially sell a business, asking a lot more questions about how does this process work. Can you maybe start off by just sort of walking us through what is a business sale and who are these sellers? And then we can sort of talk about evaluations and all that stuff.
Yeah, sure. I'll start with sort of on the sales side. You know, when we do when we are approached by a business that wants to sell, we would you know, typically meet with them first and you know, get the story of you know, why they want to sell the business and you know, get some detailed specifics on their particular business. From there, we would collect some basic information such as financial statements and a copy of the lease is usually the first thing that we look at, and then from there we perform a valuation. Now, on the valuation of the business, it's not necessarily complicated, but it's different for each specific type of industry and specific type of business. So we would look at, you know, the financial statements. If the business is profitable, we would look at, you know, a multiple of their net earnings for evaluation. And again, that depends on which type of business and which sector it's in. Sometimes we would look at the total revenue, and then the rule of thumb for evaluation could be, say, a percentage of the gross sales. So there's different methods and different ways that we would look at valuing that business.
And I'm wondering, when you're trying to give the owner a valuation, are the buyers out there using the same metrics?
I mean, a sophisticated buyer would understand these metrics. You know, a lot of first-time buyers, we would have to educate them and explain, you know, how the valuation is made. And again, they would often consult with their legal and accounting advisors that would, you know, concur with how we've approached the valuation.
And it sounds like it's business specific, but multiple of net earnings, is there a general kind of rule of thumb there?
It really depends on the type of business. You know, say a food and beverage business, it could be, you know, 1.5 to 2.5 times earnings. If it was a manufacturing business, it could, you know, with a long-term lease, of course, the longevity of the lease is going to be an important factor. To say, okay, I've got a, you know, a 4-year runway, 5-year runway, you know, to recoup my investment and to, you know, start realizing, you know, a profit on the investment. So, you know, long-term lease is an advantage. So, you know, in manufacturing, for example, could be, you know, 4 to 5 times net earnings.
So Chris, there too, when people are looking to get into to either say acquiring a business, does it differ a lot in the sales process or even the timelines? Let's say I'm buying a liquor store or maybe a coffee shop. Is there a long duration that takes place when we're trying to buy these based on different type of businesses?
It can be. I mean, typically it's not terribly long. You know, if it's a small business and it's pretty straightforward. It could be, you know, a couple of weeks for due diligence and then a couple of weeks to closing. That's sort of on the fast side. But often it gets drawn out. The due diligence of, you know, going through the information for a buyer and their due diligence process, that can take some more time. So, yeah, it could be a couple, 3 months before a deal closes, depending on the complexity of it. And then the other factor, of course, is getting the landlord approval to assign the lease. That's really it's a deal within the deal, you know, negotiating the assignment of the lease to the new to the buyer and making sure that the landlord approves them and is comfortable with their, you know, financial covenant and their business experience. So that process with the landlord can also take some time.
Now, Chris, when people are looking to acquire these businesses and a lot of these things, how do people get funding for these businesses? Is it easy for, you know, myself and Matt to go get a small business loan for, say, $200,000 to buy, you know, Chris's sandwich shop on Granville Street? Or did you have to get creative when structuring these deals, such as vendor takebacks and all that stuff? Like, how do these businesses get bought and sold by incoming purchase or incoming buyers?
I know that's an excellent question. Getting financing from a bank to purchase a small business is actually very, very difficult. More often than not, you know, a bank won't lend at all on a small business purchase. So typically, it would be the buyer would look at friends and family, their own savings, and then even take you know, equity out of their home or another asset in order to purchase the business. So most business deals we do aren't subject to financing. They've got to figure that out on their own. And then on the vendor take back aspect, definitely that's one area that we do work in. Actually, the last two business sales that I've done have both had vendor take backs involved. One was a very unique situation where it was 100% vendor take back, where the buyer, you know, had minimal savings for the purchase of the business. And then the most recent one I did was 50% vendor take back. So half was paid off over time.
And for listeners that are, and we've talked about vendor take back on the show before, but for listeners that may not understand what that means, can you just outline, Chris, how that's structured?
Yeah. So for example, the one purchase was a $180,000 business. They paid $90,000 upfront on completion. And then the other $90,000 was basically structured to be paid off in monthly installments over the next 2 years. So it's basically the seller is providing the loan.
Basically, the seller acts as the bank, essentially.
Correct.
Where do you find, so if banks or traditional lenders are not involved, where do these deals, what's the trickiest part of these deals? Is it the lease component? Is it coming to terms? Like, where do you find that that small business deals kind of hit the rocks?
Yeah, I mean, the financing aspect, that can be definitely a tricky part. Now, to come back to that, I mean, there are certain groups like the, you know, BDC and some of these other organizations that do lend on businesses, but it's a very tough criteria. The business has to be very profitable, have, you know, long-term stable, you know, track record of success. And then, you know, the buyers need to have, you know, good, solid experience in that particular business. So not to say that business, you can't get financing for a business, but it's very tricky and it's not, not that common. So that's one of the challenges that we face. The other challenge is getting the landlord approval. I mean, that's a process. We do that same process when we lease an empty space. It's really a very similar process where the tenant needs to be approved by the landlord. So we have to show them, you know, strong credit worthiness as well as, you know, again, background and experience in the particular business to get the landlord comfortable with transferring the lease to the buyer.
Chris, how different is franchising or buying and selling franchises versus a typical business? Is there more steps involved in that process?
Yeah, there's another layer of approval. I mean, not only would it be the landlord approval to transfer the lease to a new franchisee, but also the head franchise, the franchisor, needs to approve the buyer as a franchisee. So there's a whole other layer of complexity where, you know, they would have to apply with the franchise in order to buy at a particular franchise business.
Is there financing on that? Like, I would guess a lender might look more favorably on a Subway restaurant shop, you know, as opposed to say Benny's Eggs Cafe or whatever. Like, is there a difference there?
They would look at, I mean, again, if that particular store's performance is solid and it's a reputable franchise, sometimes if the franchisor will come in as a guarantor or on the head lease itself, then that definitely would help the buyer get some financing from the bank or from a lender such as BDC or otherwise.
All right, Chris, so you mentioned about BDC, the Business Development Bank of Canada. Why would a bank like that be maybe more interactive or more supportive of small businesses from an acquisition standpoint than maybe like your typical CIBC or your BMO?
Yeah, I mean, like the BDC is sort of, that is one of their objectives, is to help, finance, entrepreneurs, different ventures, including business purchases. That's really their mandate. Their criteria is pretty strict. It's a long, outdrawn process, but they do specialize in that type of lending where you walk into your home branch. They might not necessarily be savvy with that type of lending.
Chris, you work with a lot of people selling small businesses. Can you talk about some of the considerations when you're buying? And I'm thinking like strength of brand, customer loyalty, if it's a small independent shop. I guess you've already mentioned the lease in place, but over and above, the financial statements, what are you looking for when you're looking at a small business?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. There are so many facets to a small business that are taken under consideration, and definitely the brand, the longevity of the business. Yeah, I mean, customers. If there's a business that has actual contracts in place for customers, there's definite value there. The assets of the business is another aspect. If there's a lot of equipment and hard assets, those are that's a consideration as well. Now mentioning that those assets will also work favorably in getting financing for the business, where the lender will have a hard, hard asset that they can secure the loan with. But yeah, definitely, there's a lot of facets to look at when evaluating small business.
Chris, do you get asked very often for maybe the business owner also owns the real estate that they're in? Is that something that people can look to buy business with property? Or is that something that maybe not as common as maybe like the typical sandwich shop you might find for sale?
Yeah, I mean, it's not as common, but there are definitely business owners that own their property. We do see a fair amount of that, especially in, sort of the industrial sector and manufacturing and, those types of businesses, where, as we know from commercial real estate, the industrial market's very hot and there's a lot of owner occupiers that are, that purchase their own buildings for their business. In retail, it's probably not as common. For office, it's a fair amount of owner occupiers as well.
Chris, just getting back to financing real quick, is there any type of businesses that banks are very reluctant to finance? And then I guess a follow up of that, is there a type of business that businesses are much more favorable towards?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably food and beverage is probably one of the trickiest to get financing for. Restaurants, cafes, and so forth. They are tricky businesses in general, and especially to get financing for.
Sorry, Chris. I once heard from a banker that it was a very high percentage of restaurants and cafes fail within the first 5 years. Is that something, is that kind of a truism in the business?
I think so. Yeah, it's I don't know what the percentage is, but it is a very high percentage, and that's where we see a fair amount of business as a result of that, where somebody has a failing business and they want to get out and they sell to a successful operator that takes over the business and runs it well.
Is there a type of business? So somebody out there is, a couple questions here, but somebody out there is looking to purchase a small business. And they want a successful business with as little risk as possible. If somebody approached you, presumably it's not a Buck Slice pizza place. What is something, an area or a type of business that you see, usual success.
With all due respect to Buck, yeah. Slice Pete's owners.
Yeah. fair enough. I mean, to be honest, each sector, each type of business, there are very successful businesses that are being run. And, we do see a lot of scenarios where there's a long, well-established business that, for example, the owner just run it for the last 30 years and decide, okay, I'm done, I'm retiring. And they go ahead and list the business for sale. And then we find a buyer that, is interested in that type of a business in that sector or industry, and they continue running that successful business. Does that sort of answer the question?
Yeah, totally. And I'm just thinking for somebody who's, again, trying to just break into the world of small business, like it actually strikes me as quite difficult to break in if you don't have experience in the sector, because the transferring the lease becomes a challenge. Financing seems like it's near impossible unless you're raising money from somewhere else, or you have a HELOC, or you're independently wealthy. Like it does seem like there's a lot of roadblocks to becoming a small business owner. Is that an apt statement?
Well, I think that's a fair statement. But on the other hand, I would say that we do see one of my favorite types of buyers is somebody that's coming, that's been in an industry working for somebody else probably in a management position. So they are very successful for their employer,
right?
And they go from management. They say, okay, you know what? I'm gonna do this for myself this time. And they go from managing a particular company to buying a similar company that they have experience in and that they understand and know very well. And they say, okay, Chris, I want to buy a specific business in this sector. And then, we help them find that type of business. And those are very successful transactions often where, somebody moves from management to ownership, we call it.
And just thinking about the same person who's potentially thinking about getting into the world of small business and they're interested in commercial real estate, presumably if they're listening to this show, which is easier, buying the commercial real estate and then starting the business, or buying the business and over time acquiring the real estate that you're in?
Yeah, I mean, it could go either way. But I mean, we are all very familiar with, what it takes to buy a piece of commercial real estate. It could go either way on that scenario.
So Chris, as obviously interest rates are rising on the commercial lending side of the world, as well as the residential lending side of the world, that obviously affects small business owners quite dramatically, because some of them have operating lines of credit that they use to operate their business. As these interest rates continue to rise for the foreseeable future, does that sort of slow down the acquisition sales cycle of small businesses, or are they kind of exempt, considering they're probably challenged to get financing in some cases?
I mean, yeah, the financing is always a challenge to start with. It probably would be a little bit more challenging now with interest rates. So I guess the lending criteria, would change, where you'd have to have, enough cash flow in the business to support the higher loan payments. But the interesting thing that I've noticed over the years is that in times of economic uncertainty, such as the area that we're in now, I usually see an uptick in business sales, strangely enough. And I think the reason is that a lot of people, like the scenario we had earlier, somebody moving from management to ownership, they are like, okay, I don't know what's happening here with my job. There's uncertainty. The economy is going wacky. I want to grab my destiny, with my own hands and control that better than working for somebody else. Yeah. So that's an interesting thing that I've seen over the years.
Right. A certain personality, but it makes sense.
So Chris, as a final question here, before we jump into our six pack here with you, what's some advice maybe you can give somebody right now who's looking to buy or sell their business? Everything from like the timing of the current market considerations out there, all the way to maybe is now a great time to buy or sell a business?
Yeah. Again, I think anytime's a good time to buy or sell a business, under the right circumstances. And I think the best, for selling a business, the most important part is to have it priced correctly, so that it is, that it is attractive to a buyer, yet you extract the most amount of profit in the sale. Best advice for the buyer coming into a business is to really understand the business and to, you know, do the right amount of due diligence, do a lot of due diligence on it so that you know exactly what you're getting into so that there's no surprises when you complete the purchase.
So Chris, maybe as a, I have a final question here for you. So you're the team leader in the Fraser Valley. You help people sell and buy small businesses day in, day out. We're in a very unique moment. I feel like you could probably say that for the last 3 years, but let's timestamp this mid-October 2022. If Chris Van Vliet is buying a business right now, where are the opportunities?
I think I would look at, you know, something that has sustained itself over the last 3 years during the pandemic. I would look for a pandemic-proof business, we call it, something that's been successful even during these uncertain times. I mean, I would, again, look at something that I would be familiar with and comfortable with. So likely something in the retail sector or the service sector, which is my background in business. But yeah, there's various businesses that that have continued to do well over the last 3 years. And, you know, helping if I were to buy something myself or assist a buyer, I would be looking in those areas.
So Chris, before we let you go today, we have our six pack of lighthearted questions so our listeners get to know you a little bit more. Outside of the office there, I know it sounds like you're in the middle of traffic there, but we're going to hold your hand here to walk you through for about another 2 minutes, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, Chris, first question up. Something that you've purchased for $1,500 that's made a positive impact on your life?
I'm going to say I got a set of golf clubs earlier this year, so I've been enjoying that.
Oh, good one. I think Whistler.
I was gonna say
maybe you and Matt might be teeing it up again next year together. You guys seem like you had a pretty good time up there last time together. The bromance there's a bromance brewing up there in Whistler. It seems like it's carrying on into the show here.
I am asking more questions than you, Corey, but that might just be because of the lack of knowledge.
No, I'm trying to ask questions, and every time I go to talk to the mic, I get a big stop sign from Matt. So he kind of swoops in for a question there. So I'll let you guys take it.
Number two for you, Chris. Favorite vacation spot?
Oh man, I really enjoy Mexico. That's always a go-to. So I'll go
West Coast, or are you a PV guy?
I've done both, but last time I was on the East Coast, and I really enjoyed that.
Our guest last week, downtown Jeff Brown from Kelowna, there. We were recording the podcast 4 hours before he was departing for Mexico. So he's down there right now.
Nice.
He's our Mexican correspondent for William Wright Commercial right now, scouting out future office locations.
Sounds good.
Chris, next question up. What are you binge watching right now on Amazon or Netflix?
I actually really got into this Netflix show called Money Heist. I'm not sure if you've heard of it.
I've not got into it yet. I've seen it though.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it like, it's like a... like an Ocean's 11 type thing, or?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
I loved Ocean's 11.
Right on. Okay, Chris, favorite band. What are you jamming to after you hang up with us on the road?
You know what? I'm kind of all over the map on music. Like a little bit of everything, but usually you just have sort of the top 40 radio on, to be honest.
I was expecting gangster rap, but
yeah, there's a common theme here that a lot of guys that are successful in commercial real estate in one facet or another have gangster rap in their rotation there right now. And I'm just throwing this out there, and this isn't confirmed by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm pretty sure Nickelback's new song's in that top 40 you're listening to.
Is that right?
Yeah. Long drive to Kelowna, 45 times back to back new Nickelback song. All right, Chris, you've unfortunately found yourself on death row. You're given one meal before it's all over. What's the meal you're having?
You know what? Everybody says steak, and I do like a good steak, but I'm going to go a little different today. I do love all sorts of ethnic foods. So I'm going to say today a really authentic dish of butter chicken.
Oh, that's always good.
It's really off the wall, but I love ethnic foods. So
is there a pretty high spice level in that in your last meal? Oh yeah, okay. Spicy. Okay, gotcha.
For sure.
Got naan bread going on?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Good garlic naan on the side for sure.
Oh yeah. Just making naan wraps. Man, yeah. Chicken naan wraps there with rice and hot sauce.
I think you captured Corey's imagination here.
Jeez. All right, Chris. Last question here for you. You're sitting in Mexico. It's been a long day in the sun. The tequila's flowing. You got a Corona in your hand. You're feeling really good about yourself. Someone pops a mic in front of you and tells you to sing a karaoke song. What song are you singing?
I don't sing, so I'm not walking on that stage.
Oh, okay.
No matter how much tequila. Oh,
yeah, we gotta appreciate his authenticity there. I'd say, hey, no go. All right, Chris. How can our listeners find out more about what you're doing, all the amazing work you guys are doing out there in the William Wright Fraser Valley office?
Yeah, no, feel free to call me or email me anytime. Chris@williamwright.ca or 604-307-8700.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for your time, Chris. We'll let you get back on the road.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Chris. Take care. There you have it, folks. Our interview with Chris Van Vliet, team leader of our Fraser Valley William Wright Commercial Office, business sales extraordinaire.
Business sales extraordinaire. That was really interesting. I was taking a lot of notes there. Man, more challenging. Here's the thing. Over the years, and we're going into an election right now. I was reading something about mayoral candidates and how they engage the business community.
Yep.
And one thing that this made me think of was, just gave me even more respect for small business owners, because it's so hard to acquire a business, first of all, and then run it successfully. So that's one point. But I did want to, I mean, Chris said it depends. There was a question I had that I just wanted to ask you, Corey, because it is so difficult to acquire a small business when it comes to financing. Obviously, we've talked about just purchasing a commercial strata space and the financing components to that. So my question to Chris was, and I'm not sure if I articulated it as clearly as I could have, but does it make sense to acquire the commercial real estate first and then start a small business? Or does it make sense to acquire a small business, run it for a couple of years, and then go about purchasing the real estate?
Yeah, so the easier of the two avenues is the latter one there, because a lot of times when you're acquiring real estate for a business purpose, such as, let's say, for example, you have a very successful sandwich shop and a strata lot comes available and you want to buy that strata lot to put your sandwich shop in. A lot of times banks are looking a lot more on the success or lack thereof on the business itself than they are the real estate.
Right.
Because what they're looking at is, how much money does this business make? Can this business afford to comfortably acquire the property, deal with the costs associated with that, and then be able to pay the mortgage on a monthly basis and not be stretched too thin? Versus when you go into a leasing standpoint, I mean, landlords obviously are, you know, sort of checking out your credit worthiness as a tenant, but you may not have proved out your business yet. So if you try to acquire the real estate first, you're going to be acquiring it purely based on other assets that you might have, other income you might have, because the business doesn't really establish themselves. Versus if you have a very successful sandwich shop 5 years down the road and you've got good retained earnings and you're controlling top line growth, a bank like BDC will be much more aggressive to then give you the money to secure the real estate to run your sandwich shop, because they're comfortable that you can do it. And at William Wright Commercial, we've been very fortunate that we own most of the buildings or the strata lots that we operate in.
Right.
That when we're dealing with the banks like BDC or Roynat or even BMO on these acquisitions, is they're going through the William Wright Commercial books very diligently and very deep to see what type of debt servicing ability that company has to then in turn acquire the real estate. So they look more into who's the operator of the business, how much does that business make, can it comfortably acquire the real estate and then pay the bills?
Of course.
Enough that, you know, your debt servicing might be, I mean, 1.2 to maybe 1.3, which means for every dollar that you owe the bank wants to make sure that you're profiting $1.2 or $1.3. So if I have a mortgage of $1 million, the bank wants to say, hey, if I have an annual mortgage payments totaling $1 million, the bank might say, hey, we want to make sure this guy, they're earning $1.2, $1.3 million comfortably in order to service the debt. They're not going to give you the $1 million in mortgages, debts, and then hope you know, cross their finger and hope you can pay it back.
Right. So in the case of buying the real estate and starting the business, ironically, or maybe not ironically, you're seen as a bad tenant for your own real estate.
It's challenging, right? Because the bank may not know that, may not have any level of confidence yet that you're successful in that type of industry. So you got to almost kind of prove out. And from Chris mentions a lot about how challenging it can be sometimes to get the actual funding for the business. And again, I don't know what the tipping point is for a bank, but a lot of times, unless you have, you know, 2, 3, or maybe 4 locations, the bank still may not believe your story that you know what you're doing. You're still an idiot in the eyes of the lender that this could still go sour. And I think one thing that COVID proved is just because you have a lot of locations doesn't mean you're successful. It means you have a lot of expenses. And that's why you saw some very large companies have to downsize and pivot shift really, really quickly, because they may not be carrying the financial or the capital needed to ride out no income for 3, 6, or 9 months. If you, let's say, for example, your overhead was $100,000 a month, these companies may not be sitting on $1 million. Mm-hmm. They might be sitting on $150,000, enough that they can, you know, cash flow and then grow, but they may not have the ability to service their debts long term. So that obviously played a big factor in, you know, how banks will then look at small business owners and small business owners with real estate moving forward.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Corey. How can people find out more about what you're doing over at William Wright Commercial?
Yep. They're welcome to call our Vancouver office anytime, 604-428-5255. Let us know what you're looking for. We'll put you in touch with the best agent throughout the province for what your needs are. You can drop me an email anytime, corey@williamwright.ca. Always love talking real estate. Always love hearing your comments and your thoughts on the show, as well as you can visit our website, williamwright.ca. Sign up there for all the latest and greatest William Wright news.
And likewise, you can head to vancouverrealestatepodcast.com, where all the Vancouver commercial real estate podcasts live, as well as the summaries. And you know what? I just was on, as a final thought, I was just on Spotify. You have a 5-star rating on Spotify and reviews. So if you're enjoying the show, what we're doing here, yeah, at the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast, please share it with a friend or rate it on whatever podcast app you're listening to. And we appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next week.
Subscribe today.